God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Today and tomorrow, Dr. Bob Glaze welcomes Bill Snevelin back to the program to talk about a DVD and book of his on the subject of Freemasonry. Among other things, Brother Bill was a Mason at one point in his life, and if you've wondered what Freemasonry is all about, he's well qualified to let you know. Here now is Dr. Glaze and his guest, Bill Snevelin.
Bill, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you. It's great to be back.
Yes, it's good to have you back. It's been a while since I've done any programming with you, but it's always good to have you. Tell the folks just in a couple of minutes something about your life and what brought you to this point and what makes you an expert on this subject.
Well, I got led into the occult by a college professor. I was going to be a priest in the Catholic Church, and I was in minor seminary, and he told me that, you know, the Lord had been an occultist, and that's how he could, like, raise the dead and turn water into wine. And so he told me to be an occultist. So I started, you know, studying parapsychology and whatnot, and eventually I ended up becoming a witch by the time I was a sophomore in college. And that led to several other things. I became a spiritualist minister, like a medium. And then finally, I ended up down in Arkansas studying with a Grandmaster Druid of North America to become a Druid High Priest. And of course, you know, the Druids were the ancient priesthood of Celtic Britain. So what happened was, is this fellow told me, this Grandmaster of the Druidic Rite, he said, you need to join the Freemasons. And of course, because I was raised Catholic, I knew next to nothing about Freemasons. Because back in those days, you know, the Catholic Church was just death on Masonry. I mean, you could not be a Mason or be a Catholic. So anyway, when I got back into my witchy stuff, you know, I was in Milwaukee, and one of the guys we brought into the coven, his dad was the junior warden of a lodge. And I found out about this, and I said, well, could you see about if I could join the lodge? And so naturally, they were all excited to have me, because most Masonic lodges are made up of mainly older people, older men. In fact, last time I heard, the average age of a Masonic lodge is like 70. So obviously, any time they want, they can get any young blood in, so to speak. They were all excited. So I went in, I joined the lodge, I went through the first 3 degrees, and then ultimately, that's like the foundational thing, and we can discuss that more later if you'd like, but to get to be a Master Mason is the main thing. And then after that, in America, you can either go to the York Rite or to the Scottish Rite. And I ended up doing both just because I was like, I wanted more and more light, you know, because that's what they always ask you in the lodge. They say, what do you most desire? And you're supposed to say light. Well, I wanted all the light I could get. Of course, at this time, I was a witch. I was not in any way a Christian. And so the light I was getting, I didn't really care what it was. It was light, you know, ha, ha, ha. So anyhow, so I was doing that, and I was basically in the Masonic Lodge for 9 years and rose up through the ranks. I became a lodge officer. I got up to junior warden in the lodge, which is like 2 steps below the worshipful master. And I also was an officer in the Royal Arch degree. I was an officer in the Commandery of the York Rite, which is a Knight Templar. You know, I was, and then I even got into the Shrine, which is kind of like sort of a side-off thing, you know, that's their party thing. You can actually drink booze and stuff. So anyway, that was the superficial end of it. And during all that, of course, I was still being a witch, and I got deeper and deeper into the dark stuff, because that's the thing. Once you put your foot in the occult, it just gets darker. You know, it's like any other addiction. You want more power. You want more power. And so I got involved with Satanism and hardcore Satanism. And then finally what happened is the Lord intervened. I had a couple of teenage girls call up and say they wanted to come up and see me from Chicago, because I was living in Milwaukee at this time, because I was this great satanic priest, you know. And they wanted to bring me an offering. So I thought, whatever, you know. And in the meantime, what had happened was, is I'd sent a check every year to the Church of Satan. And when this came back one year, that year, in fact, that very year, a lady had written on the check, I'll be praying for you in the name of Jesus. Because she knew anybody who was, you know, doing giving money to the Church of Satan was probably in very deep spiritual trouble, and indeed I was. So I just laughed and forgot about the check, threw it in the drawer. And anyhow, it just knocked me on my tsukas, you know. I was deeply, profoundly shattered by this woman praying for me. I mean, I lost my job. I lost all my occult power. I was sick as a dog. And so I was like this when these girls come up. And you know what they brought with them? They brought with them two Christian comic books, Angel of Light and Spellbound. And, you know, they were about the dangers of the occult. And they said, you got to read these things. They're really hilarious, you know, ha, ha, ha. Because, of course, they didn't believe. But the Lord used them to bring me the gospel. Because in the back of both those comic books was How to Get Born Again. Well, at the time, even though I was really, really hurting, I was too egotistical to really pay it any attention. And so I threw the comics in the drawer and forgot about them, too. And the next day, two Mormon missionaries show up at our door. Now, people need to understand that the Mormons are related, spiritually, so to speak, to the Masonic Lodge, because there's a lot of correlation between what goes on in the Mormon temple and what goes on in the Masonic temple. And additionally, Joseph Smith, Hiram Smith, Brigham Young, all of the early Mormon leaders were all high-level Freemasons, and that can be documented. So anyhow, this same Druid guy I mentioned earlier, the Grandmaster Druid, he told me if I ever got in spiritual trouble, I should join the Mormon Church. And so I joined the Mormon Church innocently, you know, whatever. I mean, I took it seriously. I stopped smoking dope and, you know, running around and all that and tried to be a good little Mormon. But I could tell it wasn't really working. And so, I mean, I know we're not talking about Mormonism today, but, you know, the point is that it looks good, but it has no power. It's like, you know, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof. And so ultimately, I was reading the Bible. Finally, it got me reading the Bible. I was, you know, by this time I was 35 years old. I never read a Bible, even though I had a degree from a Catholic seminary. And I read the Bible through from cover to cover. And when I got to Romans and Galatians, I was just profoundly stirred. And, you know, finally, after 5 years in the Mormon Church, and again, like I said, 9 years as a Freemason, I remember those comic books. I got them out of the box in the back of my closet and knelt at the foot of the bed and prayed and asked the Lord to come into my heart and save me from my sins and be the Lord of my life. And that was in 1984. So, hallelujah. That's how I came into the kingdom. And then a couple of years later, I got into the ministry.
Bill, are you telling me that you can be all of these things and still be a Freemason or still be a Mormon?
Well, yes. Well, no, that's two different questions, okay? Yeah, you know, the Masons don't care what God you worship as long as you worship a God. I mean, you can be a Muslim and be a Mason. You can be a Jew. You can be a Sikh. You can be a Jain. You can be a witch. In fact, some of the most prominent witches in my book, Masonry Beyond the Light, I document how some of the most prominent witches of the 19th and 20th century were Freemasons. You know, people like Gerald Gardner, Alex Sanders, you know, Aleister Crowley. These names are household names among people that are into black magic and witchcraft. So, yeah, the Masons don't care as long as you believe in something, you know, and that's all they ask you when you're being kind of, you know, examined before you are brought in for membership. They ask you, well, do you believe in the Supreme Being? And I said yes, because I did. It was the goddess of witchcraft. That's who my supreme being was at the time, you know, and that was all they needed to know. Now, in terms of the Mormons, I mean, first of all, they never asked me, you know, what I was doing before, you know. They asked me what religion I was, and I told them Catholic because that's what I'd been raised. But see, I'd been led to believe that the leaders of the Mormon Church were witches. And so I had no problem still being a witch, but I gave up the Satanism and all the other stuff in order to become a good Mormon.
Okay, well, that clears up quite a bit, because there's so many people who leave other religions and go into the Mormonism. They don't interrogate you, do they?
Well, not really. You've got to realize they're an extremely wealthy church, the Mormons. I mean, they're probably per capita the wealthiest church in the world. You know, obviously the Catholics have more money than they do, but the Catholics also have, like, you know, 10 times more people than they do, at least. So, anyway, they can afford to advertise. They can afford to, you know, have all of this good publicity going out there. And so a lot of people just think, oh, well, they're just another nice church like the Lutherans or the Baptists. And, of course, they're not. They're a cult. You know, they have another gospel, another Christ, you know, even another scripture. They have their Book of Mormon and so on.
Okay, let's define some words here. First
sure.
of all, let's define the difference between cult and occult.
Well, the word occult just means hidden. It's even a word used for blood, like in medicine. If you can't see the blood in your stool when they do a blood test, it's called occult. So it just means hidden knowledge or stuff that's done in the dark. You know, like obviously, really up until the last 50 years, witches practiced their stuff in secret. I mean, they would do it in the dark woods in the forest, or they would do it in somebody's basement or rec room or whatever, because they didn't want anybody to know. Now, because our nation, and in fact most nations in the Western world, have become so permissive, now witches are all out there, you know. So they've come out of the broom closet, so to say. But the idea was originally that occult things were things that were hidden knowledge that could only be obtained. Like, for example, when I first became a first-degree witch, which is 1968, there were books that I could only get by giving someone a name of, like, the person initiated me. And only then could I acquire these books. They were occult books. Now those same books are available to anybody who wants to go on the Internet and order them from Amazon. So things have changed a lot. But that's what the occult means. It means anything that's hidden that gives you powers other than those things that come from God. Now, the cult term, that's kind of a pejorative word, but I define it to mean someone or some group that does not conform to the historic fundamentals of the Christian faith. In other words, they have the wrong God, the wrong Christ, the wrong gospel of salvation, or the wrong scriptures. Now, sociologically, a little different. Sociologically, a cult is considered a group where it's got like a charismatic leader, you know, with a power structure where they're very manipulative. So they might call, for example, Jonestown a cult. Even though, oddly enough, Jim Jones is actually a Pentecostal preacher. So a lot of what he taught, at least publicly, was in line with the Bible to a greater or lesser degree. But because he was manipulative, because he kind of had his people under a spell and so on, that kind of a thing would be considered a cult sociologically. And then, you know, and the same thing would be true when there's a single charismatic leader like Joseph Smith or the Jehovah's Witnesses, Charles Taze Russell. Those groups would be both cultic in terms of theology, but also they'd be cultic in terms of sociology.
Okay. Now then, one more definition and we'll move into your DVD. The difference between just Masonry and Freemasonry. Why are people called Freemasons?
Well, basically, it's partly to disconnect Freemasonry from the building trade. I mean, you know, a stonemason, you know, someone that lays bricks or builds, you know, stone structures for a living, may or may not be a Freemason. But the term actually means, the term Freemason means someone who is free to travel. Because what you're told when you go through the rituals is that you're free to go to any country and work and receive Master Mason's wages. So that's the ancient meaning of the word Freemason. It's someone who was free to go from country to country. Because, see, you've got to realize, in the Middle Ages, the stonemasons' guilds would travel to wherever they were building a cathedral. You know, kind of like migrant workers today, you know, will go wherever the harvest is. Well, back then, though, a cathedral was like a job that usually took 15 or 20 years to build a cathedral. And so they would go to wherever one of these big cathedrals is being built, and they would have these certain signs and tokens and stuff that they learned and passwords. So, oh, okay, it's kind of like a dues card. Like, you know, if you're a member of the Carpenters Union or whatever, you have a card. Well, you got to remember that back in the Middle Ages, hardly anybody could read or write. And so they had these signs and words that they would use instead. Okay, you're a master mason. You're allowed to come on this building site and work and receive master's wages. So that's the difference. A stonemason was just called a mason, but ever since the 1700s, the word Freemason has come to more mean people that not necessarily know how to work with their hands and with bricks, but rather they are members of this occult fraternity.
So it's something like a universal union.
I don't know what that is, but probably,
well,
yes.
If they could go anywhere and work and receive master's wages, then I guess that would be something like a union? I don't know.
Oh, you mean like a union? I see. Yeah, sure,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Because even today, like, you can be like an apprentice plumber and a journeyman plumber and a master plumber. And those words actually go back because in the Masonic Lodge you have an apprentice mason, a fellow craft mason, and a master mason. Those are the foundational 3 degrees of the lodge.
All right. Now, let's move into your DVD, which is very important. You've got so much information here. You have a lot of graphics, not just you standing there teaching. There's a lot of pictures and so forth that you back up with what you're saying, whether it be Freemasonry, whether it be the Catholic Church or whatever. But let's just start off with the first chapter in your DVD is on the Laodicean Church. What impact does Freemasonry have today on the modern church?
Well, actually, it's fairly profound because many churches, actually more Protestant churches than not, accept Freemasons into their ranks. So they don't have a problem with the idea of you being a Freemason and a member of, say, the Baptist Church or some Lutheran churches or some Methodist churches. And to a degree, that varies, you know, depending on, like, for example, I know the Wisconsin Synod Lutherans, the Missouri Synod Lutherans are very strict, and they will not allow a Mason to be a member. Either they will say, either, you know, renounce the lodge, or you can't be a member of our church. So the problem is that because of that, like the largest, according to last I heard, the largest Christian denomination in America is the Southern Baptists, and they are just crawling with Freemasons. And because of that unfortunate fact, see, people need to realize one thing. Every Mason, whether he knows it or not, is worshiping Baal. You know, the false god Baal, like in 1 Kings 18. So he may be a Christian and going to church on Sunday. He might even be a deacon or a pastor or whatever. But he's got one knee on the altar of Baal and one knee on the altar of the Almighty. And that's not a good situation because, like Elijah said in that very chapter I just mentioned, he says, how long halt you between two opinions? If Yahweh is God, serve him. If Baal is God, serve him. You know, you can't serve both. And, of course, our master also said, no man can serve two masters. And it is interesting that the head of a local Masonic body is called the worshipful master. So a master mason is, in effect, serving a master when he becomes a member of the lodge. So that's kind of eerily prophetic. So what I tell people is this. If you have a bunch of Masons in your church, it's going to damp down the fires of revival. It's going to, you know, take away the zeal for souls, the zeal for holiness, because you can't do this. You know, like 2 Corinthians 6, you know, you can't have, you know, be the, you know, table of light. No, that's a different one. But, I mean, you know, you cannot serve light and darkness. What fellowship hath light with darkness? What concord hath Christ with Belial? You know, which is another word for Baal. And, you know, and Paul tells the people, you know, come out from among them and be separate. The Almighty wants a set-apart church, and a church that's even got a few Masons in it has been leavened. You know, and you know what Paul says, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And the whole church becomes defiled by that. And I believe that's why the church in America has become a lot less effective in the last couple of generations than it used to be. You know, I mean, you just look how the basic influence of Christianity has diminished remarkably, even just since the relatively brief time that I've been saved since 1984. I've watched the influence of the church. You know, we've had the rise of abortion, the rise of homosexuality, and other things that the church should be, you know, opposed to and preaching against. And they're just out there. Nobody seems to be able to do anything about them. And that's a significant problem. And I believe part of the reason is that Masons are in the church and indeed in leadership. There's deacons, there's elders, and there's even pastors that are Freemasons. And this is scary, you know, because Masonry teaches universalism. The doctrine of Masonry is that all people will be saved, that all religions are equally good if you're a Muslim or a Sikh or a Jew or, you know, whatever. They're all equally benevolent before the great architect of the universe, which is what they call the Almighty. And that's a lie. That's not true, according to the Bible. And so I don't know how a pastor or a deacon or even a layperson, for that matter, can kneel at the altar and swear oaths and all this stuff that are very blood-curdling, by the way, and think this is some wonderful, godly, fraternal organization.
Okay. If you went on the Internet, could you find these ex-Masons for Jesus?
I imagine so. I mean, I haven't looked in a little while, but, you know, they are out there. And plus, obviously, there's the two major ones other than our ministry, which is withoneaccord.org. There's Ephesians5:11.org. And then there's also Saints Alive and Jesus, which is Ed Decker's. Ed Decker's the guy that really first blew open the Masons back in the 80s. Because for years, nobody was talking about it. And he started, and I came and worked with him. And together we made a very good team. And for the first 5 years of my ministry, that's when I wrote my book, Masonry Beyond the Light.
Okay, which folks will be able to get that through us. And Jerry will tell you how to do that. Bill, we're going to pick up this very interesting and very important subject on tomorrow's program. So, Bill, good to have you with us today, and we'll look forward to hearing you tomorrow.
Thanks, gentlemen. Tomorrow you'll hear a lot more about the DVD and the book, but you don't have to wait until tomorrow to call, write, or visit the website for your copy of them. You can do that right now. Call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, P.O. Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008. The website address is swrc.com. The two-hour DVD, Freemasonry, Fatal in the First Degree, is offered in appreciation of your contribution of $20 in the United States, $25 in Canada. Get Brother Bill's book, Masonry, Beyond the Light, when you send a $15 gift in the U.S., $20 for Canadian listeners. The book's 288 pages in length. Better yet, get the DVD and the book at the same time for a donation of $30 in the U.S., $40 in Canada. Phone 1-800-652-1144. The website address on the Internet is swrc.com. While you're at it, ask for information about the Columbus, Ohio Prophecy Conference scheduled for July 12th and 13th. It'll be a conference to remember. And when you pre-register for it, you won't have to pay the fee at the door. Most of these stations that have this daily program also include the Bible in the News portion. If your station's one of them, stay tuned because that's next. And plan now to join Dr. Glaze and Bill Snevelin tomorrow for more about Freemasonry on your Watchman on the Wall program, a presentation of Southwest Radio Ministries. It's time for today's Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. I'm Jerry Giltner. I'll be bringing you today's report. Have you heard about the Kermit Gosnell abortion trial? If your answer is no, we're not surprised. Mainstream media moguls have covered up the story to such an extent that United States lawmakers are crying foul. The Washington Times wrote on April 18th that 72 members of Congress sent letters to executives at ABC, CBS, and NBC, quote, expressing outrage at their blatant avoidance of Kermit Gosnell's abortion trial, close quotes. The Daily Caller reported, quote, calling it a purposeful blackout, the legislators said they were profoundly appalled at the network's bias, close quotes. Abortionist Gosnell is accused of killing a female patient and seven babies. If he were considered a serial murderer, his trial would likely be the lead stories on the big three networks. Yet they appear to have placed what one lawmaker described as a blackout on it. Quote, the broadcaster's blackout of the planned parenthood infanticide lobbying scandal and the Gosnell House of Horrors murder trial are the biggest and most politically motivated media cover-ups in our nation's history, said Representative Marsha Blackburn, as reported by the Daily Caller. Censorship and media bias allows the corrupt abortion industry to profit at the expense of innocent women and children. The mainstream media has a responsibility to report the truth, not turn a blind eye to the biggest civil rights issue of our times. The lawmakers also wrote, the Daily Caller reported, quote, surely the details of the trial meet your threshold criteria for a national news segment. Yet despite this obvious fact, coverage of these stories has eluded your news divisions. We see no excuse for your failure to report these stories other than blatant media bias, close quotes. WorldNet Daily, WND, published an internet story on April 18th that details some of the testimony from former workers of the abortion mill operated by Gosnell. Those stories are so gruesome we'll not go into great detail here. Suffice it to say, the descriptions of what was done to babies outside the womb constitute outright murder. One testifier told that the babies were breathing, quote, because their chests were moving up and down, close quotes. And then those babies were brutally killed. So, we wonder why the media would not want to report on such a sensational story. They seem to thrive on the sensational. As far as we know, no one has owned up to a credible reason for avoiding the sordid murder trial. Could it be that the liberal media believes abortion is an acceptable thing to do? One thing is certain, however, the Bible teaches that murder is wrong. Peter warned against taking another's life. We read, quote, but let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's business, close quotes. That's from 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 15. That's today's Bible in the News report of Southwest Radio. To get a complimentary copy of the monthly publication, call 800-652-1144. Join us for the next Your Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report.